You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 17th of May 2014 on Monocle 24. A publication for 20-somethings in Hamburg, a particular editorial take on the city of Lima, and a whole bunch of brilliant new titles springing out of one British city. The Stack's pile of magazines this week is ready to be reviewed, revisited and relished. We take a look at some new and some familiar titles with a trusted Stack voice. Taking in art, science and technology, Hollow is trying to set a new trajectory. And another Escape magazine looks at travel journalism in an increasingly unconventional way. We'll be flicking and thumbing through these, amongst others, with Mag Culture's Jeremy Leslie. We'll also be heading west, but not so far away, to a regional capital that's becoming a veritable hub of print activity.
It's just the perfect place. I mean, there are so many amazing kind of artists, designers, cheap studio spaces, and you can afford to put all your time and energy into a magazine in Bristol.
All that and plenty more besides this week on The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review show. Hello and welcome to Studio One here at Midori House for this edition of The Stack with me, Tom Edwards, standing in for our regular host, Tyler Brulé. Today we felt it was about time to have one of our classic magazine reviews, and to do this we could have no better guest than an old friend of The Stack, Jeremy Leslie, founder and creative director of Mag Culture, a company specialising in content design for print and digital media. Jeremy has a pretty impressive selection of some magazines that have caught his eye on his global magazine travels, amongst other things. Jeremy, welcome back to The Stack. Good to have you with us.
Always good to be here.
Maybe let's start. Shall we just launch into our review of magazines immediately?
Yes.
What should we begin with? Now, I know you've got Neon here. Perhaps we'll start with that one, because you were mentioning to me before we started the show about kind of why it appeals to you and what it is that they do so well. Remind our listeners, if they're not familiar with Neon, what it is and why it is that it resonates with you.
Neon is a German magazine. It's published by Stern, the long-standing classic news weekly that's published there. And they've branched out into a range of sort of spin-off titles, spin-off monthlies, aimed at different audiences. They've got one, I think, for new parents and older people. But Neon, it is for the sort of 20-somethings, young people, single people. Being German, it's in German. I don't have German, but... Never let that stand in the way. Who needs words? It's all about the visuals. But I've been doing a lot of work in Luxembourg recently, and whenever I leave Luxembourg, I pick up a copy of this magazine because it's unlike anything we have in this country. It's a really well put together, well designed, good looking magazine about relationships and money, and just about things that affect younger people. And it's just an intelligent magazine for an audience which somehow in this country we abuse them with really poor quality content.
They're not very well catered for. Yeah. I was talking to Tyler Brulé, editor-in-chief, of course, on his travels in the last couple of weeks, and he was in Germany. He was talking to me about one of those Stern stablemates pitched at the over-40s market, and he was talking about the difficulties implicit in that and that perhaps it was rather ill-advised. And he specifically mentioned now, and he said, it's funny because they do that so well. What is it about it? I don't know, stylistically, design-wise. You mentioned, obviously, it has a sort of slightly lurid cover that you would expect from something called Neon. But how do they pull off that trick? Because it's not always easy, but as you say, they do it very well.
I think, from what I understand, the project has come together slightly under the radar. I mean, it was originally launched, I think, to try and attract that age group into the Stern family so that they would then buy the main magazine. And I'm not sure it necessarily that plan worked out, but in the process, they've sort of accidentally created something, which, as I say, is well put together. But it's there's a real emphasis on strong photography, strong design. They're not scared to use a lot of space, and neither are they scared to run a lot of black and white text in heavy columns. There's a great confidence. I think, I mean, Germany still has a huge publishing market, and there's still a long tradition that's still values that greatly. So perhaps it's not such a surprise that something like this has been a success for this age group. But nonetheless, it's really satisfying to see something put together so well and to be such a success in that environment.
It's interesting what you say about Germany there, because it has a reputation, I think, well-founded for doing sort of serious print. Well, you think of the newspapers, that they do still look kind of austere and serious and very formal. And it's quite pleasing, as you say, that a publisher can direct something at you know, a younger audience, but still be not necessarily cerebral and po-faced, but to be kind of serious and to treat them with a degree of, I guess, respect for its readers. Why do you think perhaps you mentioned in this country is not so good? Is it because it's all bells and whistles and trying to appeal to, like, yeah, young and hip, and it's a bit embarrassing, really? Why are other countries less good at it, do you think?
Well, I think there is the tradition in Germany, and I think of serious content presented in a serious manner and accepted and understood on that level. The team behind Neon have achieved a really lovely balance between using that kind of historical heritage and applying onto it the sort of the cover we're looking at here is making references to texting and such, like very simple visual references to the kind of obvious culture the younger audience might appreciate, and they mix it up very well, very nicely. Mm-hmm. There's no, it is done with respect. I think certainly in this country we tend to go to one or other of an extreme. Either something's too desperately hip and trendy and sort of, you know, and it's huge for a week and then it's over. Or else it's all just celebrity and cheap shots, and, you know, there's a lack of respect, I think, for the audience in both aspects.
And yet it's such a key market. It's interesting, as you said, that the inception of that was to try and, you know, guide your future readership, mm-hmm. if you like, into the family stable. It's pretty short-sighted not to cater for them in print,
yeah,
I guess.
No, absolutely, generation. Absolutely.
Let's move to something that's, I guess, maybe at the kind of the other end of the spectrum in seriousness-wise, or perhaps not. It's an interesting magazine that's about, a coming together of various creative industries, mm-hmm. creative facets. This is Hollow. Just remind us about this. Remind us about where this comes from. I think it's the first edition, and it's a sort of a meeting of what? Media, technology, art as well?
It's a meeting of art and science, really. Art and technology. I think there's a lot of interest in this area at the moment as the two extremes kind of are meeting around the internet and the technology that we use day to day. And I think, you know, just this week we've had the news that Carphone Warehouse and Dixon's are merging on the basis of the Internet of Things. So there's a lot of attention being paid to that area. But this looks right under the skin, it gets right under the skin of that subject and what the technology means in terms of creativity, and covers a lot of the experiments that some of the more out there artists and scientists are doing with data to create art, to create fantastic systems. And it's an extraordinary 200-page treatise on the subject.
I was going to say, it's kind of heavyweight in scope and literally. I've got it here. It's, you know, really sort of lovely stock. Very arresting imagery, as you could imagine, with that sort of thing, that meeting of art and science. Lots of kind of interesting graphics and sort of graphical images. And I just like even the sort of cover art has a sort of science meets art meets...
You're absolutely right. I mean, it looks the part. And actually, the story behind the cover is exactly a very eloquent... example of exactly this. It's a deep blue cover with lots of white dots, essentially. But those dots represent where the letters H, O, L, and O appear throughout the whole magazine. So it is.
It's clever.
It's a bit of system design.
I like it indeed. And do you think this is one of those magazines where, let's be honest, it doesn't matter maybe if you don't get all of it. Mm-hmm. It's about being exposed to these worlds, you know, in a fairly sort of broad and general way, and even if some of the complexities are a bit elusive, which they would be from my limited intellectual capability, it doesn't really matter too much.
No, but then I think you could say that about most magazines. I think, you know, the idea, obviously, when you make magazines, you sit down and you want everybody to read every single little utterance, every word, and look at every picture. But the reality is, the magazine experience is you flick through, and certain things attract you, and you read maybe 40%, 30% of a magazine, unless it's particularly close to your heart.
You're a voracious consumer.
Yes.
So that's Hollow. Well, thumbs up to them, perhaps,
yes.
So far. Jeremy Leslie will stay with me as we continue. Plenty more magazines in his stack, and we'll also be off to one of the UK's independent magazine hubs, Bristol, right after this. Last week, we headed west and followed Printout to Bristol. Printout events are run by Stack Magazines, a platform that shares independent publications and promotes print journalism. This edition of Printout was focused on Bristol's booming independent media scene. Monocle's Carlotta Ribello spoke with some of the editors and founders who crowded into the Crofters Rights pub and art space in the city.
Printout events promote quality print journalism with the goal of bringing industry aficionados together. For the first time, Printout has decided to leave London and go west. I followed along to Bristol to find out why the city is becoming such a bustling hub and home for independent media. Before the Printout event started, I caught up with some of the members of BIP, Bristol Independent Publishers, a new organization launched December last year. Daniel Humphrey is the editor of Off-Life magazine. He explained why Bristol is the place to be.
It's just the perfect place. I mean, there are so many amazing kind of artists, designers, cheap studio spaces, and you can afford to put all your time and energy into a magazine in Bristol. And, you know, the rent isn't huge here. It's not like if you're in London, you know, you couldn't just... I quit my job and just started doing Off-Life, you know, on a moment's notice. I was looking at London, I was looking at kind of Manchester, but yeah, it just felt natural to do it here. There's so many great magazines kind of popping up all over the city, and they're all independent, they're all kind of self-financed, and with all those things kind of coming up around you and being able to meet them and get advice off them, it just makes it a natural environment to do this sort of thing.
On a day-to-day basis, do you feel that connection between the independent magazines based here in Bristol?
I think so, yeah. So we started BIP, Bristol Independent Publishers, to really try and network these people, and not in a business getting money off each other sense, but just share ideas. We kind of meet pretty much every week, at least one or two of us, you know, go and have a coffee and chat through any problems you might be having. And yeah, I mean, you see some of these magazines just in the last 6 months, their print run has doubled, their circulation has doubled or tripled. And yeah, I'd like to think that some of that community is, as you know, we're all helping each other on a daily basis. So
if for some heading to Bristol was a conscious decision, for others it was already their home. Bone Shaker magazine, a publication focused on the human side of cycling, got its start from a workshop already established in the city. Mike White, the editor, explained why Bristol is right for them.
I think the fact that Bristol's a very free-thinking, creative city definitely helps. It has a very strong cycling culture. It was the UK's first official cycling city. And despite the hills and the awful roads, there are loads of really passionate cyclists, and there is a general atmosphere of the right kind of positive community, and I think Bone Shaker definitely feeds off that and hopefully contributes back to it as well. I think there are so many of the right ingredients to flourish as a creative person in Bristol that it naturally draws people in. It's sort of a magnet for them.
But are these magazines missing out because they are outside big global capitals like London? Rosa Park, editor of Serial magazine, thinks otherwise.
It's definitely not a constraint, especially not now. I mean, you know, you talk to most people on email, on Skype. I don't feel a great sense of geographical boundary. I choose to be in Bristol because this is where I feel I can do my best work. In terms of where I choose to sell and distribute the title, I mean, that is entirely up to me. And I am proud to be from Bristol, and we are a local Bristol magazine, but I am not limited to that. I think we were fortunate that we launched during a time when independent publishing was clearly thriving and on the rise. So as a result of that, we have been able to grow quickly, definitely quicker than I had anticipated.
The motto at Printout events is always the same. Print is not dead. Elliot J. Stocks, founder of Eight Faces and Digest magazines, believe there's still room out there for quality print.
I think it's kind of a symptom of where we are right now with our society, that because everything is digital, people are craving for something real, to actually have something they can hold in their hands, to have some beautiful photography, something that you can only really appreciate if you're holding the physical artifact. So because of that, I think independent publishing right now is enjoying a really massive boom, and especially in Bristol, because it's quite a small, close-knit community, into really interesting things. It feels like we're in the real right place and the right time to be doing these kind of magazines.
I wasn't involved in Bone Shaker for the first issue.
The panel discussion lasted about an hour. It attracted people from all walks of life, various industries, students, creatives, and the curious passers-by.
Security.
The event was a success, and it proved that Bristol deserves its spot on the media map. One of the organizers, Stephen Watson, who runs Stack Magazines, was telling me why we should take this community as an example.
Coming here tonight and packing out this room with people who are really passionate about these magazines, I'm genuinely quite taken aback. I think that the closest I've heard anyone come to it is talking about Bristol's history with independent media in general, and the idea that people here, if they like something, then they go with it. There seems to be like a slight kind of outsider spirit here, and that obviously plays in very well with independent magazines. I think because they're in it for the love, they want to see other people succeed as well.
For Monocle in Bristol, I'm Carlotta Ribello.
Jeremy, I'll talk to you a little bit about some of the magazines from the vibrant Bristol scene in a moment or two. But just to sort of pick up on what Steve was saying there, Steve from Stack Magazines and the other contributors in that package, we're sort of sitting here with broad grins on our face, because it's a great story about thriving print and about a real scene somewhere. I just wondered, in your view, how important is it to have that, a real hub of that character? Because being around competitors and allies alike really can drive people towards, yeah, new heights of excellence, can't it?
Oh, yeah. No, I think it's essential to regard yourself as part of a movement's too grand a word, but as part of a feeling towards a common endeavour, if you like. Mm. I was down in Bristol with Steve. We organised it together, and it was, as Steve says, there was a really good feeling there, really vibrant, excited. You know, it's the first time that BIP had got together and actually put together an event, and there was a real sort of, there's, I think, almost a realization on the night, we really are something, we're doing something. We were turning people away at the door. There was a real buzz, a very enthusiastic reception, and some great magazines. And that at the heart of it all is vital. There's some really great magazines happening there.
What is it about Bristol then? Is it just something in the water? I mean, what, is it just, or is it like-minded people who have happened to gravitate? Because we've seen this in the city before in other walks of life. You know, mm-hmm. in the music scene, the kind of early 90s, there was a real sort of wave that came mm-hmm. out. Is there some strange creative juices that flow? What makes it happen?
I think whenever something like this happens, everyone's scratching around looking for a big theory or a big thought behind it. I think we run print out every 2 months in London, and that's become something. We've been doing it for 2-3 years now, and that carries on well. But in a big capital city like London, there's so many other things going on. There's so many options. There's so many things. You know, we can put print out on a Tuesday night, and there'll be 3 or 4 other attractions in the local area, let alone. Whereas I think I remember talking to an editor of a magazine in Berlin about why it is that the sort of almost the second or third cities are always spawn lots of magazines, and his theory was that there's a sort of element of being slightly under the radar. It just sort of happens naturally, and because there's not a massive attention immediately poured onto it, it grows kind of organically, and it becomes something. I think that's what's happening in Bristol. I think there has always been a kind of creative scene going on there, and as Steve said in the package, I think there's a certain natural tendency for things like that, the music scene in the past. And so, I mean, I turned up and Portishead were playing on the sound system, of course.
What a beautiful event it sounds like it was.
But, you know, it's open to that. And because there's not that massive media attention on it, it just has grown. And it's very powerful.
Well, let's pick up on a couple of those themes, not just Bristol titles, but that idea of sort of organic growth and how it happens and how it affects different magazines differently. Mm-hmm. Continuing to delve into your stack, you've got another Escape, new-ish title out of Bristol. Tell us about how you think they're faring, because this is the most recent edition. I know you think that they've really made some great leaps forward.
The three other magazines I wanted to quickly run through, starting with Another Escape, which is one of the sort of the leading independent titles that have come out of Bristol recently. I think it's their third issue, and in fact they launched it that night. There were copies down at printout, and for me this is an example of, you know, people launch a magazine, they want it to just immediately hit the sweet point and exist and be perfect. The reality is, when you're making magazines, it's never, each issue, it's as good as you can have it, and then all you see is how it's going to be better the next time. And it moves on issue by issue. And I think that with this edition of Another Escape, they've just stepped up a level. This one's based around a theme, which in this case is wood. It's got a beautiful cover of a, presumably rather a sad image in a sense, but it's a beautiful picture of a smoke from a forest fire in the States.
But it's an amazing image, isn't it? It's almost sort of painterly quality.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's a stunning image. And there's just the care and attention, that theme throughout holds together a rather disparate number of stories, different elements, but it just holds it together. And it's a real, you just feel that before your eyes, the magazine is maturing, is becoming itself, if you like.
Let me ask you about that process then. What are the best, and perhaps the other magazines you've got here can help to illustrate this point, but what are the best drivers, if you like? Does it come from the maturity of the editorial team? Does it come from market forces, other external constraint? Is it or should it be always reader driven? What are the best ways to evolve, if you like?
I think it's all in the hands of the people making the magazine. It's a form of communication. You put something out there and you get response, you hope. I mean, you know, generally
supposed to happen, yeah.
You get some sort of response, be it from people in the industry, people, the readers, people, contributors, people featured, the subjects of in your magazine. And you then have to kind of keep your vision in mind as you listen to the feedback and adjust or not adjust. And it can be very hard to have an avalanche of comments and then decipher the ones to pay attention to. And that's where, in a sense, editing and making a magazine, really, that's where
earn your cross as well.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Boat, which is one of the other editions that you've got here. And this is interesting exactly because of that editorial process, because, of course, they sort of parachute the team into different markets each time, which is a pretty novel one. I imagine it's a fairly challenging way of going about this business, which can be hard enough at the best of times anyway. Where have they pitched up for this most recent issue? And why has it been so successful?
Well, this is the seventh issue, and they... they spent a few weeks in Lima, capital of Peru, making the magazine, which is, the cities they go to are always very interesting, and the stories they pull out are always fascinating. But the reason I brought the magazine along today was more because of the sort of general nature of what they're doing and the change they've made with this issue. They've completely redesigned it. And I think there's a lot of mystery around redesigning and changing the look of magazines, but actually it has to come from an editorial intent in the first place. Mm. And here... what they've done is, I mean, effectively the first six issues, you know, obviously going to a different city each time leads you in all sorts of different visual directions and all sorts of different styles and stuff. And really the first six issues, they kind of adapted the styling and the typography and everything to suit the local area they were in. So in the sense the magazines were about the city rather than about the magazine itself. With this redesign, they've made the magazine have a very clear visual identity within which the city sits, which is a subtle change, but it's a huge change in terms of the future of the magazine and I believe what the fortune of the magazine. I think now it's very clearly it's Boat Magazine in Lima rather than Lima.
Absolutely. And it's interesting to sort of just lead through the magazine. It's the first time I've looked at this issue and their introduction by Rafael Leon is actually subtitled The City That Remakes Itself Every Day. And that's interesting that it kind of seems to sort of speak to or echo what the magazine is doing. And there's certainly some of the things that people would recognise from former titles. They've got some wonderful imagery, some great, vibrant photography in here. Well, I saw a beautiful image a minute ago of... Well, yeah, you sort of think that maybe, you know, cockfighting sort of thing doesn't lend itself necessarily to making beautiful images. But, I mean, that's a pretty arresting, spread, full-bleed image, really, really sort of beautiful. Again, almost sort of painterly images on this.
I think, a lot of this comes from the magazine, the experience they've had on the six issues. It's grown up. Davey and Erin, who make the magazine, have got to terms with the magazine in a way the whole thing's grown up and moved to another level, and it's really pleasing to see a project that's so exciting and from a conceptual basis making that shift.
Let's go there. That's issue six. Let's go to a magazine that's up to, I think, maybe volume 10, perhaps, which is Wrap. And tell us about this one and where are they on the sort of evolutionary scale?
Well, they're right up there as well. This issue, I've always loved Wrap ever since I first picked up the original copy, which was effectively a kind of bound set of wrapping papers, which happened to have some writing on the back of them. And that's where they started from. And they've always had this kind of dual idea where, you know, it's a magazine about illustration and creative image making, but that you get these pull-out parts, which are the idea of being used as wrapping paper. But they've gradually become, you know, they've found themselves becoming more and more like a proper magazine. The binding changed. It's become more editorially led rather than visually led. But they've kept their vision, they've kept their target on what they want to be doing, and they've learned the lessons of making a magazine, and it's developed and grown. And now it's a really, really interesting, powerful magazine that still has the wrapping papers in it.
Well, I was going to say, how important is it despite that evolution, to kind of retain, I guess sometimes they don't literally need to be there, but to retain those kind of identifying features that were, in some respect, the calling cards in the early days.
Well, I don't think you should be scared to drop something if you feel it's not working. But it would be, I mean, were Rap to drop those, I think it would be...
Well, it would be a crying shame. It would be a crying shame if nothing else, because they are, they're absolutely beautiful.
And the reality is, I think, you know, I'm sure some people use it for wrapping paper. I think a lot of people stick it on the wall as posters.
Mm. That's almost too nice. You don't want to give it away to somebody, do you?
Well, buy two copies.
that's the way to do it. And just in terms of the sort of that continuing evolution then, do you think that if you get to a magazine where you look at a more recent edition, you think, wow, that's really delivering. I really, really like this. Is there a risk that complacency sets in? Or do you think that because people are, the people who make these pretty successful magazines are usually fairly exacting in the kind of demands they make of themselves and their teams, that they'll still keep pushing the envelope? Should you, I guess, hit a point where you say, we've got this right, let's kind of stick and not twist anymore? is that a risk? Or do you think that people are always wary of becoming maybe a little complacent?
That is a risk, but as soon as you do that, you've lost the plot. I mean, as soon as you get an issue back from the printer and you look at it, you think, yep, done.
Job done.
You're in the dangerous territory then. Magazines are actually like, they're almost like people. They're friends that you have to, you know, you have to keep that relationship and you have to feed them and look after them and let them be. And there's this kind of love-hate thing that you have as you make them. And if you get complacent, then, you know, you're
in real trouble.
Yeah, that's when you're in trouble, yeah.
I think that is a good salutary lesson upon which to end. Jeremy Leslie from MagCulture, thanks as always for coming to join us here on The Stack. And that brings us to the end of this 90th edition of The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. Special thanks, of course, to our good friend and my guest today, Jeremy Leslie, and to our producer, David Pleasant, and not forgetting our studio manager, Claire Urban. Any comments or queries, drop us a note at info@monocle.com. And don't forget, as if you would, we're back next Saturday at the very same time. Of course, you can always listen again at monocle.com via iTunes, SoundCloud. The choice is yours. But for now, until next time, from me, Tom Edwards, it's goodbye.